Welcome. Come in. You're just in time for the paranormal view. So turn your lights down and your volume up, because tonight you could get very, very scared. With your hosts, Henry Foister, Cat Cloco, Barbara Duncan, and Jeffrey Gould. Welcome, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the ParaX Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. It's been a beautiful day, hot day here, but it's time now for us to just sit back and relax and listen to a good show, one where I don't have to talk a whole lot, so you guys will be happy with that. Tonight, we got a special kind of show. We're going to be talking about ghosts, but not ghosts that you may know or ghosts from here. But we are going to be talking about ghosts from Japan. And I would read her bio, which I will. The one that's going to be doing most of the talking is going to be Cat Cloco. She was born and...
She was bored, and now she's here. Longest bio ever.
And so with that, we also have Barbara Duncan with us.
Who also was born.
Yeah. The only one that's not with us tonight is Jeffrey Gould.
So yes.
Hopefully he's having a great time, and hopefully he'll be back next week. So, like I said, tonight, we're going to be talking about Japanese ghosts. So,
yeah,
if you have questions, you can private chat them to either Ceiling Cat, Cat Cloco, or myself, and we will get those answered for you.
Yeah.
If you are listening from somewhere other than here in the chat room, feel free to come over to para-x.com, click on the live chat button, and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to have a great time. And interact, ask questions, and all the good stuff. But if you would like to ask a question and you're not in the chat room, you can by sending a question to theparanormalview@gmail.com. And we will get that, just to make sure you earmark it question. We will get that answered for you. Let's see. Oh, there's other ways, too, that you can get a hold of us, isn't there?
Okay. Yeah, there is. You can also tweet over a message to me at ParaView Radio on Twitter. And I'm actually manning both the email and the Twitter, and also my own account on our chat room. So, yeah, you'd be directly speaking to me and asking the questions and everything. So, actually, it's really good that it's hot outside, because the time for ghost stories in lots of parts of East Asia is in the summertime. And the entire purpose of it is to give you that chill down your spine so that it chills you from all the heat and humidity that you are sitting through. So,
now,
good timing.
Yeah, before we get started, though, on the ghost stories, just a couple of little things. News, in case you haven't heard. There was a cyber attack on the Homeland Security. They hacked in, stole all the personal data and Social Security numbers for every federal staffer was stolen. So great job there, Homeland Security. I feel safe now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple of different things with the conspiracy theory. I've heard talking two or three different times on radio shows this week about they are talking about doing away with all our currency. Everything will be done electronic, and I don't know who's going to be taking care of that and tracking it, but I'd prefer being able to handle my money myself.
Or print websites off, as you have demonstrated tonight. Hasn't that particular theory been around since credit cards became popular, though?
It's been talked about quite a bit, but I guess they're talking seriously now about doing it in some of the countries overseas.
Oh, well, some of the countries, you mean the entire rest of the world, because our we're in the entire continent.
It's not just ours. There's some places overseas that they're actually contemplating on doing it probably before we do.
Well, I know there's Bitcoin, which is baffling, but yeah, there's that exists. But I don't think that's going to take over actual paper currency.
I don't think the American people would stand up for that.
I don't think many people would stand up for that. Let's be honest.
If they don't worry about that, then we got a bunch of spineless people in the United States, is all I can say.
Well, you kind of forget that the rest of the world is actually a lot like the United States, other than maybe with a little bit of a homogeneous population. But they don't like being pushed around any more than we do in America. So this idea that the rest of the world is going to let this one thing happen and America's not is foolish. Because I can tell you, the Europeans that I know wouldn't stand for anything like that either. So I don't know. I feel like this is a conspiracy theory and we just stick it in that bucket because it's been there for about 30 years.
Right. Which I don't see it happening, but you know, that's like I said, it's conspiracy theories. So
and this is a fun thing. Most of Asia, like in Japan, you use cash. You don't use credit cards. You almost never do. Whenever I visit, I have to go to the bank and take out money, and then just keep going every day because you take out as much as you think you'll need. You almost never use a credit card. Oh. Yeah, and a lot of the world is like that. Most of it's cash only.
One of the news item from today was my 6-year-old grandson's baseball team. Mm-hmm. Won 3 games today, and the 3rd game was their World Series or their championship game. So they went the whole year undefeated.
Wow.
Which is
good job.
Yep.
We need an applause sound effect to insert here.
I've got downstairs somewhere. But anyway, I went out and watched the first game this afternoon and then come back and get to watch the last two. But he did good. He got a couple of hits and everything. So he was happy. So with that, while you go ahead and start on the first story. Cece, you got anything first?
Not really. Just try to debunk this whole, there's going to be an asteroid in September which is going to destroy the world. No.
Oh, man.
Oh.
It's several lunar distances from the planet. Mm-hmm. It's not going to do anything. It's not hooked into whatever that military exercise is, which I still can't remember the darn name of. Yeah, from July to September or something like that, and that's in preparation for the end of the world. No, it's not going to happen.
You know, an asteroid was coming towards us, we wouldn't know very much ahead of time. So I'd be just like, okay, so I won't be living past this particular date. I'm going to go eat ice cream now.
Yeah.
It's just like, eh, c'est la vie. Yeah.
C'est la vie, huh?
C'est la vie. What are you going to do? It's completely out of your hands.
Yep.
That's right.
And just maybe meditate more. I don't know. Anyway, so actually, anyway. I pulled up a whole bunch of stuff, and Henry actually pulled up a few different lists that are going to be surprises. Is one of them on hyakumonogatari.com, Henry?
A what? H-Y-A-K?
Yeah, H-Y-A-K-K-U-M-O-N-O-G-A-T-A-R-I.
.com.
Yeah. .com.
It's the 10 famous Japanese ghost stories.
Yes, yes.
That's one.
Hyakumonogatari.com. Hyaku means 100. Monogatari means tales. It's 100 tales.
That one right there.
Yeah. So, for a little preference for everyone, my specialty in anthropology is, which is the discipline that I graduated Indiana University with, was Japanese ghost stories. and mostly just ghost stories and urban legends, but my specialty is Japanese because I also speak Japanese fluently and lived in Japan. So you may catch me a few times accidentally saying we when I mean like the Japanese, because I kind of, it's a mentality thing. I guess I think I'm Japanese. But if anyone has any questions, feel free to stop me and say, Kat, we don't understand how this works, or we don't understand what's going on. Because I've been in this for like over 15 years now, and I forget the cultural differences that people don't understand sometimes. So please feel free to stop me and have me explain something, because I read this stuff all the time, and it's a big part of my life, and it's like if you ask Henry about Westerns, he'll just go on and on and on, and I just sit there, I'm like, I don't know any of these, because I've never watched them. So, yeah, he can go on about Western stuff, or you talk to Pat and Doug, and they know all that stuff about the Civil War. Well, this is my big thing. So, last week, we actually asked people, hey, we don't have a guest, so what do you want us to talk about? And I brought up, hey, I could talk about Japanese ghost stories. And everyone in the chat room lit up. And they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. So I looked up, I took the entire week, and I looked up a couple of interesting ghost stories and other paranormal, supernatural things that are interesting about Japan. I'm not talking about the Aokigahara, which is the Sea of Trees, or known as the Suicide Forest, because we have done that previously on, an episode last year, and also on one of the times when I was a guest on the show a few years ago. I've been to the Aokigahara, which is super spooky. I know, what is it? It was the sci-fi show that wasn't Ghost Hunters. And now I can't remember. It wasn't Fact or Faked. It was Destination Truth. Oh. They went to the Aokigahara and filmed there and got some really spooky images from that. So I can attest from being there, it is really spooky. It's very easy to get lost because since it is on the north side face of Mount Fuji, it's not the entire base of Mount Fuji, it's just the northern side. There's a lot of volcanic ash and rocks and everything. So one, you get, when you go up even to level 5, base station 5, or station 5 on the hiking trail, everything is dead because it's just volcanic rock. And it looks like you're in hell. And it has a faint smell of sulfur. But the Aokigahara is just south of that, and before the tree line ends, and it's just a sea of straight growing pine trees. And you can lose, you can't use a traditional compass there because the magnetism is all messed up. But it's very dense, it's very dark, it's very acidic because pine needles are acidic, so the soil's acidic, but people will go there and camp out and commit suicide. So if you just walk through, you can accidentally walk past something you think is a life-size doll, and it's not. It's a person, or it was a person. Yes, Henry?
Yes, Henry, what?
I heard somebody intake air like they're going to ask a question.
It wasn't me. I wasn't even breathing.
Okay. Whoa, what?
No. It wasn't me.
Okay. Anyway. My ears are too keen. Anyhow.
I did send both links over.
Yeah, I'm looking at... Aha, yeah. IO9. Okay. The second link I know, Henry. That one's okay. Anyway, so Japanese ghosts are interesting. And I'll speak about them as opposed to Chinese or Korean or other Pacific Islander ghost stories because I know about these. And I have firsthand experience with ghosts in Japan. But it's interesting. The Japanese religious culture is, there's a saying where you're born Shinto, marry Shinto, die Buddhist. Meaning that when you're younger, you tend to celebrate the animistic religion of Shintoism, where everything has a soul. And if something manages to get over 100 years, 100 is an important number, it will gain a soul if it's an inanimate object. So something, for instance, like the house I live in is 107 years old. So according to Shinto culture and Shinto tradition, My house now has a soul. So it becomes an obake yashiki, which means like a ghost house. Like there, it would just have its own soul and be able to alert me if anything happened. So it's the same goes with like shoes or kettles or things like that. They can get their, they gain their own soul. And these things are called obakemono or strange things. But on top of that, Shintoism, you have the imported religion of Buddhism. And it came in about 700 to 800 Common Era. So 700 to 800 AD. And Shintoism and Buddhism kind of work in tandem. They're complementary religions. So when you ask a lot of Japanese people, what religion do you practice? They'll just kind of stare at you because they don't know how to respond because they technically are dualistic. They'll celebrate both Shinto holidays and Buddhist holidays. And a lot of those holidays are on top of each other. They share gods who have been renamed. And now I'm just drawing a blank. But anyway, every single Buddhist temple will also have a Shinto shrine on the same compound. One of the medieval emperors decreed, well, actually it wasn't the emperor, it was a shogun, but he decreed that everyone had to be within walking distance to a Buddhist temple and Shinto shrine. So you'll always see them on the same compounds. And there's a few that are separate from this, and these tend to be the high holy sites, like the Great Shrine of Ise, where the sun goddess Amaterasu, who's a Shinto goddess, resides. That's a purely Shinto site. There is Atsuta Taisha, which is the Great Shrine of Atsuda, which is in Nagoya, which holds the sacred sword. And there's not a Buddhist temple, I don't think, associated with that one. And there's one third that I can't remember off the top of my head. There's thousands of Buddhist shrines, thousands of Shinto shrines. And yeah, it's hard to remember all of them, but I've been to a good few. I love the architecture, so I visit a lot of these places. With Shinto shrines, the architecture does differ depending on what deity is enshrined there. So that's an interesting point. If you're a big architecture fan, I think you'd be fangirling over that. But anyway, so for everyone, and wow, I lost the chat room. I was like, okay, chat room's back. Oh, it's filling up. That's great. I haven't bored everyone to death. So for everyone, where would you like me to start? I have Gateways to Hell. I have Vengeful Spirits. And I have Phantom Roads. And I have a Samurai's Head, which I think we should actually save till a little bit later in the show. Or we can start with your lists, Henry. Where would you like to go?
Ever which way you would like to go. What? Which one kind of would be scary enough to get everybody in the mood, you might say?
Easing everyone into it? Yeah. Okay, let's see. I think we can start with... let's see, reading chat room and trying to read these things. How about with the Gates to Hell? How about that?
Now, before we start on those,
yeah.
At what point did Godzilla come into the picture?
Godzilla? As in the kaiju? The big monster?
Monster, yeah.
He is a very, very modern contemporary construct, which was born of post-World War II. And Japan is very sensitive. Oh, Rashomon. That's a different thing. Japan's very sensitive to nuclear power and the effects of what happened after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, Godzilla is a rabbit hole we could go down on a different show, but... he's very new, and he's kind of drawing from the ideas of old ancient yokai or monsters, but adding that very contemporary twist of the atomic age. So I don't know where you want to go with that, but he's really new, and he's there. We should do in a few months, I'll just do a kaiju episode and we can talk about all these monsters and their implications. But and there are social scientists who do study them.
Yeah, they're, I seen. Did I lose you guys?
No, I'm right here.
Okay. It just got awful dead silent there. I seen where they found some old fossils that had some blood in it, supposedly. And you sit there and wonder which one of these idiots is going to end up trying to take DNA like that and grow one of these monsters. I
Well,
see one of the new ones coming out now and just started eating everybody.
you mean like Jurassic Parking it,
Right?
which is really, really on topic because the Jurassic World came out
Yeah.
last night.
Yeah, so
So.
you just wonder if somebody actually was able to do something like that, if they'd be an idiot and start growing a bunch of these things.
Yeah, I don't know. We're talking about ghost stories, so I'm not really
Let's
on
check
that.
the gorilla stuff in.
Also, I'm not a biologist, so my opinion is it would be very expensive and good luck finding anything that would fund that. But anyway, so I'm going to start our tour of Japanese hell gates to hell in Beppu City. I love that name, Beppu City, Oita, Japan, which is on the island of Kyushu. And this isn't the main island. This is a smaller island that is just directly south of the main island. It actually has a very lively volcanic, a lot of volcanic activity, and it's created eight different hot springs that they all have been called jikoku or hell because they're so hot you can't bathe in these. You will die. You will boil yourself to death if you try to get into these hot springs. But they've created some really interesting features. And for anybody that wants to see the images of these hot springs, just look for Beppu City Hells or the Beppu City Jikoku, which is JIKOKU, Jikoku. So the first six are in Kanawa District. And the first one is the Umi Jigoku, which is the ocean hell. And it's called this because the hot spring has an aqua color to it. It looks like the ocean is boiling. The second one is the Onishibozu Jigoku, which is a very muddy hot spring. And the way that the hot air pockets come up from the ground, they look like human heads emerging from like a mud bath and then they explode. So it basically looks like a what they used to say, a bunch of monks bathing, just bobbing around, and you just see their balding heads just bobbing around a hot spring, like a sauna. So that's where that name comes from. I think it's kind of gruesome to think about like men just bobbing around and then their heads exploding, but whatever. The next one is the Shiraike Jikoku, which is the white pond hell, and it's named this because of the milky water of this particular hot spring. And I will say, all these hot springs you can go look at. They even have gift shops, but you can't get into. The fourth one,
Why would they have gift shops that you can't get into?
No, you can't get into the hot spring. You will die.
Oh.
But you can get into the gift shop and buy things, and you can actually buy face creams and foot creams and body creams that have been made from the same elements in these hot springs, and it's supposed to be good for you, which is kind of funny given the last hot spring that's on this list. So, and I'll get to that in a second. Number four is the Kawado Jikoku, and it's called the Cookie Pot Hell, which I think is the cutest name. The cooking pot hell,
Yeah.
because of the way the springs are, it looks like a hot pot boiling because the water's really clear. But what I love is the city made a statue of an oni or a goblin. He's wearing a little cooking outfit, so it looks like he's boiling things to eat them. It's very cute.
the ones that get boiled, do they then turn into ghosts?
I guess so. He's probably a vengeful ghost because you don't get a proper burial that way. So the next one is the Oniyama Jikoku, which is the Monster Mountain Hell or the Goblin Mountain Hell. And this one I like because it's the coolest of all the different hot springs because they have live crocodiles in it. And you could just go, it's like a zoo. You just look and you're like, hey, look, crocodiles. And they actually breed crocodiles in this hot spring.
Now the crocodiles get into the water?
Yeah, they do. They swim around.
But they don't boil like we would.
No, but this one I think would probably be a little safer for people to get into. Not saying that I'm telling you to go do it. Oh. But it's cooler than the rest of them.
Oh.
So they can live. But kind of like macaques, or as Sai says, the monkeys, will get into hot springs up in Hokkaido. Those are the peach-faced monkeys with the white hair that you see lounging in hot springs, natural hot springs. And there'd be snow everywhere. That's up in Hokkaido. Those are macaques. Anyway, where am I? The Yama Jikoku, which is just your standard old hot spring. It's just like, it's clear water, it's really bubbly, and that one's not very terrifying at all. I don't know why they call it that. Anyway, the last two are in Shibaseki District. And the first one we would actually be really familiar with, this one's called Tatsumaki Jikoku, or the Spout Hell, because it is a geyser like Old Faithful in Yellowstone National Park. And this particular geyser will go off every 30 to 40 minutes for 6 to 10 minutes at a time. And people will gather around and you just watch this huge pillar of water just sprout out of the ground. And it's what, from the photos that I saw of it, it looks like it's in the middle of a shopping district. So, yeah. And the last one is actually why all these hot springs are on the list. And it's called Chinoike Jikoku, the Bloody Hell Pond. Yum.
The Bloody Hell.
Bloody Hell Pond.
Well, now, all these places that are on the list.
Yeah.
Is the Japanese themselves scared of the spirits that might be there?
They could be. These are basically, as I was about to go on with the Chinoike Jikoku, there's good reason to be very afraid of these. So the Bloody Hell Pond is said to be an actual portal to hell, because it fits the description of what the bubbly ponds of or lakes of hell are described to be in some Buddhist sutras. It's what they describe to be parts of hell to look like. And this pond, because of the high amount of iron in it, is blood red. And it boils up and it looks like blood, not even blood soup, because blood soup will turn kind of that dark red. This is a bright red. And there are actual carvings of oni, or goblins or demons, in the rock face, the natural rock face around it. The Bloody Hell Pond has been described in Buddhist historical records since 700 Common Era. And it has consistently boiled at 78 Celsius, which is 172 degrees Fahrenheit. If you get into that, you'll be dead within a few minutes.
Yeah, I'd peel the hide right off, wouldn't it?
Yep, it would. Wake you up and then you'd be gone. But the reason, another reason why it's called that is because it used to be a site of torture. So if you pissed off whichever warlord ruled over that area, you got taken to this pond and they would torture you by plunging extremities into the water, your head into the water, and holding it there until you spoke. And if you did not agree with them, they just threw you in and you boiled to death. So,
well, that's kind of like the way they would do witches. Let us send you to the bottom, and if you live, then you're a witch.
Yeah, this wasn't a hey, you live, you're innocent thing. It's hey, you're screwed, so we're going to throw you in.
Yeah.
So they've never been able to, that I could find, actually excavate to see if there were a lot of human bones in there. But it has a very bad reputation for being not necessarily haunted, but a gateway to hell because of the trauma that did happen there and the fact that it's just a really interesting shade of red and it's a boiling natural hot spring. So that's the first gateway to hell. And it is 8:30, so I don't know if you want to take a break yet, Henry, or I can go on.
Is the next one longer than a few minutes?
It's a little bit longer than a few minutes.
I guess we can go ahead and take a
quick break
if you guys want.
Oh, yeah.
You got anything before we go out on break?
Well, let's take a break.
All right.
Yeah, I like to hear her talk every now and then, make sure she's
still there. She's still there. Yeah, the spirits haven't gotten to her.
What we're going to do is we'll let,
I'll take us out.
And I'll bring us back, I guess. And same way, then I'll let Cece take us out and then I'll bring us back. How's that sound then?
Sounds like a plan. Okay. So everyone, you are listening to The Paranormal View with your host Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Barbara Duncan, and myself, Kat Kloko. Tonight, our topic is ghost stories, gateways to hell, and the paranormal side of Japan. There's more to come after the break.
It's always time for the dead to shine in Hollywood. The legendary Dearly Departed Tours has stepped up their ghostly game by offering the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour. Dearly Departed has long been an orb of hope in the paranormal world, having been featured on television's Haunted History and Haunted Collector. Their terrible tales have been made infamous in Marla Brooks' The Ghosts of Hollywood books. The new Ghosts and Legends Tour is a 10-block, 70-minute dusk time stroll down the boulevard of broken dreams. You'll be guided through the golden age of Hollywood and see where the unearthly Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney, and the calamitous Black Dahlia are still said to linger. You'll see Hollywood's gothic hotels, legendary theaters, and restaurants, never forgetting their permanent occupants. No stranger to investigations, Dearly Departed Tours has first-hand knowledge of some of these hauntings. For details of the Hollywood Ghosts and Legends Walking Tour, find Dearly Departed Tours on Facebook, dearlydepartedtours.com, or call 1-855-600-DEAD.
Hi, this is Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream Store in Gettysburg, the most haunted ice cream store in town. Stop in and see us next time you're around. We feature 16 flavors of homemade ice cream made right here in the store. Look forward to seeing you.
You know, there's nothing like a great memory of a great time. And if you grew up during the 1950s, 60s, 70s, or 80s, boy, have we got the memories for you. There was no time more innocent than the 1950s or 60s, nor was there a time more politically explosive. Hi, this is Steve Shockley, a.k.a. The Shock. Join me live every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern for a Baby Boomer Rock with a Shock sock hop on rockwithshockradio.com.
They're out in the shadows tonight and travel about in the dim fading light. With the moon on the rise, it's no surprise. They're out in the shadows tonight. They seldom make any sound. Looking over your shoulder, they're here and they're gone. Deep in the dark, they'll remain. Lost in their present domain. There's a creak on the stairwell, it's clear. Step after step, you shudder with fear. The air all around you is cold. They're here and they're lonely, I'm told. Somebody's crying, it seems. And you know if it wasn't a dream. It sounds like children at play. Where they come from, nobody can say. The graveyard is weathered and old. On their tombstones, their stories are told. The passing away are still out there today. Why they're out there, nobody can say. Spirit once part of the past, lost in the present, his fate has been cast. They come and they go like the wind. Though they died long ago, they're back here again. Yes, they're out in the shadows tonight. And they travel about in the dim fading light. With the moon on the rise, it's no surprise. They're out in the shadows tonight. With the moon on the rise, it's no surprise. They're out in the shadows tonight.
Hi, this is Hollywood Haunt writer Marla Brooks, and you're listening to the Para X Radio Network.
Para X Radio presents Real Persons of Genius.
Real Persons of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X show host.
Armed with nothing more than a laptop and a microphone, you hit the air to scare the bejesus out of your audience.
What the hell was that noise?
Like a dog peeing on a fire hydrant, you always whet our appetite for more.
I just can't get enough.
Whether it's witches, ghosts, fairies, or Bigfoot, we admire your ability to set aside reality and believe anything anyone tells you.
Seek professional help.
So the next time you're kneeling in front of your 8x10 glossy of Dave and Tom lighting a candle, remember, if it wasn't for you, I might be able to sleep without the lights on.
Mr. and Mrs. Para X Show
Host. Para X Radio Network, powered by CBS.
And welcome back to the Paranormal View right here on the Para X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight and those that are listening from around the world. We appreciate each one of you, too. We do have listeners tonight from the USA, UK, Canada, and Australia, and I'm expecting a whole lot more countries coming in before this show's over with. So,
or maybe unknown.
Yeah, could even get an unknown also. Tonight we do have with us Kat Cloco.
Hello.
And Barbara Duncan.
Yep, here.
And we're talking about ghosts and ghost stories and all the scary things from Japan.
Yes, the supernatural side of Japan.
Yes. Now, of the ghost stories that you have, I know you've already got another one that you're going to read first, but mm-hmm. which one, I guess, to the Japanese is the most scary?
I think it depends on who you ask, because just like if you ask you or I or Barbara, we have different things that scare us. So
yeah,
that one's a hard one because I'm not Japanese, and everyone has different things to scare them.
Yeah, I get scared every morning when I look in the mirror.
Okay. There are a few stories that have survived the test of time and get retold over and over again. And probably the one that is most famous is Okiku in the Well, which I know I've talked about on a previous episode. And I know Sherry in our chat room also asked about it. And a very, very short version of the story. You have a servant girl who works for a shogun. And a shogun was basically a wealthy landowner, like a count. would be in English or Western society. And he had a servant girl named, which one am I doing? Okiku? Yeah. Who he was in love with, and he wanted her to be his mistress, and she kept saying no. And eventually, he was just very abusive towards her. Well, one day she accidentally broke one of the plate. Well, actually, there's a version. He broke one of the plates, or he hid one of his very expensive china plates that were imported from China. And he had 13 of them, and she would count them every single night because she was just a house servant. And because she wouldn't return his love, he blamed her for the missing plate and gave her an ultimatum saying, hey, you either confess that you will be my mistress and live, or I'm going to kill you. And she says, well, I'm never going to be your mistress. So he threw her down the well. And the well is in present day Hijime Castle's grounds. And the story is that her ghost would rise up out of the well, go to his house, and count every plate. And at plate number 13, she would do this blood-curdling shriek. And she kept doing this until the shogun went mad himself and died. And then her soul was appeased, and she never haunted anything again. And this has been turned into a famous kabuki play. Kabuki is kind of a Japanese version of, I'm going to say opera, like Shakespeare's comedies, where they're more lighthearted, they're more colorful, as opposed to no plays, which are actually more like opera. And yeah, we would know it in contemporary society as the story from The Ring, because they use the character Sadako is actually the character Okiku, and she comes out of a well. So everyone knows that horror movie now. I think there's like 13 version, like sequels to it in Japan. So it's a big part of pop culture.
Is that like our 13 ghosts?
I don't think so, because there's only one ghost.
Oh.
It's only Okiku. She comes out of a well. But there's 13. It's kind of like the Halloween franchise, where it just they keep making more movies. Or Friday the 13th, where they just keep making more movies. That The Ring series has something like 6 or 7 sequels. But it's the same story that just keeps getting retold. It's a female ghost that gets thrown down, or a female that gets thrown down the well, and for whatever reason, she's vengeful, comes out of it, and haunts everyone. So that's probably going to be the most popular one, I would say, because of how it's maintained to stay in pop culture for, oh man, that would have been since about the 1600s. So that has some longevity to it. So that's the best way I can answer your question.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, and the Swamp Lady Sherry in the chat room says, with each new movie worse than the ones before. That's correct. And also how they promote it, cheesier than the ones they did before. Yeah. I think a few years ago they had a parade of Sadako coming out of the television, and there was all these girls who were dressed up, and it was kind of like one of those Halloween costumes where the top half is like Sadako, and the second half, the bottom half, there's a fake TV around her waist. And they just walk around with black pants on. It's weird. Google the images. Just Google them. They're hilarious. Anyway, so I'm talking about stories that are a little bit less told in the English-speaking countries. And the next place that I have, which is A Gateway to Hell, and this is a literal gateway to... Well, not literal, but it is seen as a gateway to hell in Buddhism and actually has ghost sightings. So this one's interesting. So I am going to introduce everyone to Mount Osore, or Osore-san, which literally means Mount Fear. Osore means fear. So Mount Fear. It's in Aomori Prefecture, which is the farthest north point of Honshu, the main island. And the last eruption that Mount Osore had was in 1787. So it's a dormant volcano. And it has a Buddhist temple in this dormant volcano. So you drive up to the temple and you'll see Bustavas all over it, and you're just surrounded with the scent of sulfur, and you can see where it's been leaking out of the volcano's crust for a few hundred years now because it's stained yellow. So you have, and it's all volcanic, So it looks like you've entered hell, and then you have this Buddhist temple there. It was the Mount Osore's temple was established in 862 AD by the Buddhist monk Jigaku Taishi. Say that 10 times fast. And it is said to be an entrance into hell. A brick runs off of Mount Osore into Lake Usori, and it is it's called the Sanzu River. And the Sanzu River is like the River Styx from Greek and Roman mythology, which is that's how the dead cross from the our world into the afterlife. They have to cross the Sanzu River. However, unlike in Greek mythology where you get into the boat and you hopefully have coins to pay the ferryman and he'll take you across, depending on how you acted in life, depends on how you get across the Sanzu River. So if you were a good person, you take a bridge. If you were slightly naughty, you have to wade through the water. If you were a horrible, horrible person, you have to wade through the Sanzu River that is full of snakes and crocodiles and other gross things to get to the afterlife. So there are four said rivers like this, and the Sanzu River is the northernmost one.
Now, if you're already dead, what does it matter whether you go across with the snakes or not?
Well, here's the thing. If you're a ghost on this plane, generally in Buddhist terms, and I'm going to say that generally because just like in Christianity, where we have a lot of different sects of it, you have Catholicism and you're Protestant, and then you have all those different varieties. It's the same way with Buddhism. Just saying one thing in Buddhism does not equal to everything. So I'm just going to put that out as a disclaimer. If you are a ghost on this plane and you're walking around seeing your loved ones, unless it's Obon in August, that means that your remains were not properly memorialized when you died. You didn't have a funeral. And you're a vengeful spirit. So it doesn't really matter, but you're kind of living through your own hell anyway.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. We have a temple at the summit of Mount Osore. We have a hell river. And let's see. Mount Osore has a very volcanic landscape with blasted volcanic rock and noxious fumes from sulfur, which creeps up from the volcano. So it looks like something from the underworld. And you have Jizo, the Bustava of hell, and also the guardian of children, found all over the site. And what they'll do is he's a very popular god that you'll see his statue. And usually if you've been to a Buddhist temple, he's wearing like a red bib and he's kind of bald. But if you have lost a child in childbirth or a stillborn or just lost a child due to an accident and unforeseen death, you usually put offerings in front of a Jizo statue at your local Buddhist temple. So imagine these little statues. They're not very tall, maybe about 2 feet by about 9 inches wide. You just have hundreds of them around the landscape, and people will put stones down at these Jizo Buddhist statues at Mount Osore if they've lost somebody. So it's a sea of stones and statues because this temple has been around since 862 AD. Let's see. They also leave offerings. They'll leave candy, stuffed animals, cards, balloons, things like that. And the Buddhist monks who tend the property still tend to those things. And there is actually an Itako Taisha Festival, which is held July 20th to the 25th every year at the Bodai Temple, Bodai-ji, that's the temple that's on Mount Osore. And it's an interesting festival and probably the last of its kind because it employs the use of Itako, or blind mediums who channel the dead. Itako are dying off. There's only 4 left in the country. 3 of them died in 2009 alone, and all of them are over the age of 80, I believe. And they are a traditional blind female shaman from northern Japan. But because of the government, they haven't really been able to employ anyone new to their ranks. So there's only four left. And at this particular festival is when you can actually see them. And they'll channel the dead for you during this festival. And they just like channel women, not women, but mediums may channel the dead. They'll speak with the dead's voice, use their accents, their intonations, words, slurs, slang, whatever. And they're very convincing, I hear. And ghost stories, basically, that you'll see vengeful spirits, people who didn't have satisfactory deaths. But the most commonly reported thing to happen in, to be reported in Bodai-ji or Bodai Temple is the feeling of being watched, but not by like one or two spirits, which I'm sure a lot of people have had experience with in the paranormal community, where you go into something like Waverly Hills and you feel like you're being watched. I know I've had that feeling before at different locations, like going to Pennhurst. But this is not just like a few. This is thousands of spirits staring at you. And this has been just told over and over and over again, reported over and over and over again, that people who visit, as soon as they go through that front gate, just feel all the death that has happened there. And that is Mount Fear in Aomori Prefecture.
Mount Fear.
Yes. Yes, yes. Any questions?
No.
Anything to talk? Nothing. Everyone is
I keep appreciated. Asking as I come across them here.
Okay. Yeah, it's
I'm sure Cece's working on a question. It might be she might be a little late getting it here, but I'm sure she's working on one.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll move on to the suicide cliffs. And I've actually visited these places. No, this particular place. And it is Tonjinbo, which is in Fukui Prefecture. And everyone, you're able to go visit Tonjinbo, the suicide cliffs. It's on the Sea of Japan. And they're basaltic cliffs that were shaped over the years from erosion by the Sea of Japan. And they are just a drop right into the ocean. And I visited them. I actually have a humorous story where I got foot stuck in a toilet. So maybe I'll tell that one after I finish the ghost story.
Wait a minute. You got your foot stuck in a
toilet. Yeah.
Now, what were you trying to do? Push the stuff down?
I'm not going to tell you until after I've finished talking about my ghost stories.
All right. Go ahead.
So, Tojimbo is a common thing, especially during August, July and August, which are seen as the ghostly months in Japan. They'll make all these variety TV shows where they claim they've gotten ghost footage. And I've seen this every single year surface on my Facebook pages. People will link to me, oh, look, there's a ghost. And what it will be is it looks like a person who runs and jumps and then disappears off the cliff. These are Tojinbo cliffs. And a lot of these particular videos have been... they're fake, but some of them are real, and it's really creepy. People have claimed being shadow. People walk up to the edge of the cliff and jump, and then just disappear. Let's see. There are two main ghost stories. One is an origin story for its name, and the other one is very similar to it. The first story, the origin story, the legend states that the name of Tojinbo actually did not come from the cliffs, but from a monk. And let's see, another Buddhist monk, actually, who was named Tojinbo. According to legend, Tojinbo fell in love with a beautiful princess named Aya. Tojinbo, however, had a rather bad reputation and was disliked by not only the other priests, but the people in the town around him, too. And they kind of scorned him for being in love with this princess. And so much so that one of the Princess Aya's admirers tricked Tojinbo to meet him at the cliff. And when Tojinbo did, the admirer pushed him off. And Tojinbo died because that is just a steep 90-degree cliff dive right into the rocks of the Sea of Japan. But Tojimbo didn't let death stop him, because he became something very, very scary and something that is feared in at least old Japan myths. And that is something called a goryo, or a vengeful spirit, but more so than just like a normal person. These become so powerful. He is so angry at what happened that he's able to control the forces of nature himself. So he became an anniversary ghost, or kind of, I don't want to say residual, but every anniversary of his death, Tojimbo would come in basically as a typhoon, and he would shake up the entire residence. He would blow with extreme wind and extreme rain onto his little, the old temple he lived in and the city nearby. And he did this every year for decades until a new Buddhist priest came in and finally did a memorial service at the cliffs. This appeased his ghost. He stopped coming in as a typhoon, and everyone was able to live a happy life. But to remember what had happened, they named the cliffs Tojimbo after him. Yes. And the second story actually is similar, in that there was a corrupt Buddhist priest that no one liked in the town, and he managed to make everyone mad. So the townspeople rose up one day, took the priest out of the temple, and threw him over the cliffs. And his ghost did not become a goryo, did not become vengeful, but if you are looking around the cliffs, especially at dusk, it is possible to run into an old Buddhist monk wearing his robes, just looking out at the sea. And he doesn't say anything, but will fade away in front of you. Now, as an interesting aside to that, Tojimbo is still a very popular place for people to go to commit suicide. On average, 25 people will lose their lives jumping off from the cliffs every single year. There is, though, a volunteer group led by a retired police officer, Yukio Shige, and they patrol the cliff area every single night as they can, and they convince people who have come to commit suicide not to. And since 2003, the group estimates that they've saved about 500 people from jumping since 2003. And actually, if you look up Yukio Shige, you can find CNN, Washington Post, New York Times articles about what he's doing and how it's a good suicide prevention model for other places such as the Aokigahara, the suicide forest. And then there's also a suicide cliff in Okinawa, and getting volunteer groups to come out and intervene, basically. So I found that interesting.
Now, some of these places that you talk about,
mm-hmm.
because I don't even dare try to pronounce any of the names.
Yeah.
But you might want to throw some of the names like that in the chat room so people can see what the name is and if they
okay. want
to look it up.
So, let's see.
You don't have to do them all.
Yeah, I'm not going to do them. And also, let's see, I can't type and speak at the same time. What I am going to do is on my website, I am going to put up photos and links to all the articles and all of everything that I'm using for tonight's show. So tomorrow, you, our listeners can go back to katklokow.com, katklokow.com, which is my website, and all the information will be there from tonight's show. It may also help Jeff when he writes up the synopsis of the show for his minutes later in the week. But yeah, I realize this is a foreign culture to a lot of our listeners, and it gets into some deep and heavy things. There's a reason why there's a ghost around. Somebody died. That's a heavy enough topic as it is. So yeah, I will be putting up all the names and links tomorrow up on my website. Oh. And I will put it on our Twitter book, our Facebook, our Twitter, and all the other social media so people can go and find that website.
Excellent. Now, a couple of people was wanting to know about some of the suicide things in the forest.
The Aokigahara.
Yeah, you might want to talk just a little bit about that, because they seem to be pretty interested in that.
And, but I already did at the beginning of the show.
Well, we've got people that come in since then.
Yeah.
They can always listen to
them. We've talked about the Aokigahara so many times on the show. I think it's every time when I was a guest, I think. So if you go into our archives, you can find, especially, I think it was the first time I was on the show, maybe the second. Talk about it in length because I've been to the Aokigahara and what I experienced. So, It's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's just I have a lot more content that's new.
Sounds good.
Rolling on. So
I'll give you one more before we take a break.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, I have so many good things. Let's see here. We talked about that boo. We can talk about the Phantom Roads.
Okay.
The Phantom Roads of Japan. One in particular, which is the Yurezaka. Which is interesting. This one actually took a little bit more digging for me because it sounds like it's just an urban legend on the surface. And then as you keep digging deeper, you're like, wow, this really could have some legitimate ghost sightings to it. So, Yurezaka. Yure is the Japanese term for ghost. Zaka is hill. Like Osaka, that Sakazaka, that same thing. Osaka, the city of Osaka, literally means big hill. And so if you are walking around Minato Ward in Tokyo, you will come along this really nondescript hill, but it has a little wooden placard next to it that says basically Ghost Hill. And you just look at it, you're like, why is it called Ghost Hill? And you look down it, and there's some few apartment buildings, nothing real exciting. And you're like, okay, and you walk up it, and then soon you just start seeing all of these Buddhist temples. Well, at every single Buddhist temple, you're going to have a Buddhist graveyard. This is why it's called Ghost Hill, because the Yurezaka, that road, passes by something like 5 or 6 Buddhist graveyards. And what happens is you walk down here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Did I lose you?
I hope not.
Okay.
Oh, it's the ghosts. The ghosts did it.
Well, you was talking, all of a sudden you just went dead.
Where did I leave off?
Something about looking down the hill.
Yeah, if you look up the hill, if you walk up this hill, the Yurezaka, and you look down the street, you realize very quickly that not only are there apartment buildings, but there are a great number of Buddhist cemeteries attached to Buddhist temples. And this is why it's called the Phantom Road or the Phantom Street. It's not because it disappears, but because it is nothing but graveyards. And if you walk down this particular alleyway, which is it's about as wide as one car, because it's a one-way street. If you go down there at night, you have a high probability of running into a ghost crawling out of one of these cemeteries. So it has a little bit of a history behind it, though, because I was just like, why are they putting all these cemeteries together in Tokyo and kind of north central Tokyo? It turns out that in 1635, when they wanted to build Edo Castle, they ended up wanting to build it in the middle of the bay area, the harbor area. And because Tokyo used to be a fishing village and it just grew up into this huge metropolis over time. And eventually when the Shogunate moved the capital from Kyoto over to Tokyo, then they wanted to build a new castle. And I'll explain what the Shogunate are in a second. Anyway, so when they did this, they wanted to move all these temples, and they did. They managed to do it, but what they didn't do is move the actual bodies, which this is a problem of all of humanity, I guess, where you move just the headstones but not the rest of the bodies. So this entire area is super haunted by the ghosts of people whose remains have been interrupted. And so if you walk down the street, you'll run into them. And it's hundreds of years of ghosts.
Hmm. Now, none of these particular ghosts tried to cross that river?
Well, they would have technically crossed it, but then come back because their graves were disturbed.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in Buddhism, you have different rungs of reincarnation, and humans are, I think, third up from the bottom. One incarnation above us is the ghostly realm, or the vengeful ghosts, and one below us is the hungry ghosts. And I know this is important because of one of the lists that you found. Henry talks about them. But the Shogunate, going back, this is a history lesson now, Japanese history lesson. Basically, they were a militaristic set of princes that decided to take over the imperial throne. The emperor was still around, but he had no power. And instead, this military group had all the power, and they would basically come up with all the laws and then make the emperor sign them. And they did this from, about 1400 to 1869 and AD. So in 1869, 1867 is called the Meiji Restoration because America came in with Commodore Perry and said, hey guys, we want to do trade with you, so we're going to open up your country. And that's America stopped the Shogunate from having power, basically, and some other Western powers too. But that's what the Shogunate are, is a militaristic order, basically. So whenever you hear about the samurai, or samurai, as I think they would call it in America, they're talking about people that would have lived during this time era from about 1600 to 1867. Yeah. So we can go to break now.
Okie doke.
I think I've bored everyone to death.
Not really. They're all liking it, which is pretty good. And Cece just sent me a message saying that we also now have listeners from Mexico and Japan.
Oh, yay!
Told you, they're coming on. We'll probably get a couple more even before we get off.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Cece, you still with us?
I am still here.
Well, you know what you get to do?
I get to take us out. You get to
take us out.
Yay. Everybody, you are listening to the Para X Radio Network, and tonight on the Paranormal View, we're talking Japanese ghosts with Cat Cloco, Henry Foister, myself, the Ceiling Cat, and the missing Jeffrey Gould. We'll be right back after a few messages.
Good news, everyone!
We're back, baby!
That's right, we're back! Hi, I'm Pat McCormick, and Ghost Soldiers Radio is back! We're teaming up with The Shock on Rock with The Shock Radio, and we are on a mission.
We're on a mission from God.
A mission to play great music and have fun.
God be praised.
Ghost Soldiers Radio starts May 16th at 10 p.m. on rockwiththeshock.com.
Hey, kid, you like music?
Sure.
Good.
So if you like music, join us as we move on up. Saturday, May 16th at 10 p.m.
Yeah, we're moving on.
So join us May 16th at 10 p.m. for Ghost Soldiers Radio, only on rockwiththeshock.com.
We finally got a piece of the pie.
I found it at last! Marla's Sacred Cauldron. This is the legendary artifact that has been whispered about in hushed tones for hundreds of years, and now it's mine! All mine!
Who dares defile the sanctity of my castle walls? Step away from the cauldron, you impertinent, muddy-metal maltworm.
Never! I've spent half my lifetime trying to discover your age-old secret of stirring the cauldron.
Oh, for Merlin's sake, that's no deep, dark secret. Just tune into the Para-X Radio Network Thursday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern for more cauldron stirring than you can shake a wand at.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess I don't need to take up any more of your time, so I guess I'll be going.
Not just yet. We've got a little unfinished business to take care of.
That's Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Hi, I'm Mike from Mr. G's Ice Cream in Gettysburg. You're listening to The Paranormal View on Para-X Radio Network.
Rat, where are you going?
I'm going back to the Paranormal View, back where I belong.
Please, please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rat, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kinds of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rat, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear.
Line.
Oh, you've got to be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, Kat Cloco, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They all talk gobbledygooky, the Para-X family. The shows are paranormal, not stuffy but informal. The topics are abnormal, the Para-X family.
They're strange, deranged, unrestrained.
So grab your favorite brew, it's time to rendezvous, as we give awards to the Para-X family.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Paranormal View right here on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. And those listening from around the world, we appreciate you. If you're not here with us, feel free to come on over, para-x.com, join the live chat button, and you're in with all these wonderful people. And we have a whole room full tonight, and I'm glad to see that.
I haven't bored them to death.
Oh, no, you're fine. Unless they're just stunned and they can't find their way back out. Anyway, if you do have questions tonight, and looks like we've been having quite a few, feel free to either private chat Ceiling Cat, Cat Cloco, or myself with your questions, and we will get those answered for you just as soon as we can. We got Cat Cloco with us.
Hi.
And Ceiling Cat, Barbara Duncan. Maybe she's with us.
Oh, no. Unknown got to her.
Did you unmute your mic?
Oh, no.
No, she's gone somewhere now.
Oh, no.
Oh. I know. Oh. She's got her foot caught in the commode.
Oh, no. Oh, yes. I did promise to tell that story. But on this particular thing, she's been spirited away, or kamikakushi, as they say in Japanese. Yes, I promised the toilet story. I'm sorry, Henry. I forgot about that. So, as I mentioned, I had gone to the Tojimbo Cliffs, and I did this actually as a family vacation, as a tag-along with my friend's host family. Now, something in Japan has still is the squat toilet. And this is basically a toilet hole, like what you would see with a Western toilet, that bowl, but it's on the ground. And you have to very delicately aim to get into the toilet. And then you use it, you flush it, just like a Western toilet, and you walk away. Well, yeah. So, as someone who's grown up in America, and Western culture, I should really say, Yoshiki, we have sit toilets, and I had never seen a squat toilet before. And I know squat toilets exist in other places besides Japan. My friend who's Greek has told me about them in Greece. But I open... This is before I knew the difference between the terms yoshiki, washiki. Yoshiki means Western, washiki means Japanese. They have it written on the toilet stalls, but I couldn't read it at that time, because this is when I was really new to Japanese. I open up the stall door, walk in expecting to see a Western sitting toilet, and instead I trip and fall into the hole of the squat toilet and got my entire foot stuck in the clean water, but I had a wet shoe the entire rest of the time. And everyone knew what I had done because they probably did it to themselves at some point. Everyone inevitably falls into the toilet, I guess. So yeah, I had one damp left shoe, and everywhere I walked it went squeak, squeak, squeak. Yeah. I will never forget that. And I looked for photos in some of my albums, and I don't have digital photos. I'll have to go into my actual physical photo album, dig up a photo, and take a photo of it to put online.
Now, so. I did have, excuse me, people was wanting to know what your website was so they'd be able to go to it and see this. You can put that in the chat room a little bit later.
Yeah, it's www.catcloco.com. That's KATKLOCKOW.com. And that's my professional writing website. And if you want to read my graphic novel, that's jinxedcomic.com. But
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I know some people, they're clamoring, wanting more stories.
Everyone's laughing at me for sticking my foot in the hole.
Now
I deserve it.
I'm going to let everybody know why Kat is, even though I've got these stories here that some of them I could probably, you know, read. You do not want me to try and say any of these words.
But I love you, Henry. The only one I think I would want you to try to say, Aussie Jeff kind of challenged you to do it in the chat room.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we can talk about her before I get into the decapitated head of a samurai floating around Japan, because I think it would be funny. Crafty like that.
Which ghost was this one?
I just put it up in our Skype.
Oh, okay. Hold on here. Let me go look at it then.
For everyone, it is spelled KUCHISAKEONNA.
Oh, you want me to say that?
Yep.
God. I thought you loved me.
Oh. I do, Henry, but I also like poking fun at you. Just.
The good thing about this is it's spelled. It's pronounced the way it's spelled.
Yeah, it's phonetic.
Kuchisaki Ona.
So close.
So close. Listen to this. So close.
Yeah. Okay. It's actually pronounced Kuchisake Ona.
Oh, well, I was close.
We're very close. You sake'd it. Or sake'd it. Sake to me. Oh.
Well, talk about this then.
Oh, okay. Kuchisake Ona is... When I was on Darkness Radio, by the way, they thought we weren't in safe harbor with me saying this because it just sounds so wrong in English. Kutsutake Onna is really an urban legend, and it's an interesting urban legend that has managed to be around for about 200 to 300 years. The original version of the story was there was a very vain aristocratic woman who was married to a aristocrat, and she loved herself very much, always looked at herself in the mirror, and kind of for a while forgave the fact that her husband was having extramarital affairs. And so he had extramarital affairs. She forgave him. She had an extramarital affair, and he did not forgive her. Instead, he sliced her face in half, basically. She gave him, the Glasgow smile. And if you've seen the Joker from the most recent Batman movies with Heath Ledger, that's basically what it is. It's from ear to ear. You slice your face from ear to ear around your mouth so that your jaw would just basically hang down lifelessly because you've severed all those muscles. And then, to make matters worse, he's like, well, now you have to live this way for the rest of your life. No man is ever going to love you again because she's hideous. So she committed suicide by jumping into the river. However, she turned into a vengeful ghost, which, depending on the story, is either she's gone up in the realm of reincarnation or she's turned into an onryo, which is a vengeful female spirit. She stalks the knight after her husband and then murders him. That's the original story. It's kind of like anticlimactic. It's like she's a ghost, she murders him. The end. But due to a very interesting case that happened in the 1970s, allegedly, it's resurfaced in modern day. Now, in the 1970s, allegedly, there was a female pedophile who was chasing after school children up in Hokkaido. And she was going after this particular girl when she accidentally stepped in traffic and was killed. But with the impact of the car, it severed her or fractured her skull in such a way that it basically gave her that look of the Glasgow smile. And according to the internet, of course, the creepypasta forums more precisely, this story just swept over Japan and everyone got very cautious about their kids for a while, but eventually it let up. It turned into an urban legend, though. It said that there was this female spirit called Kuchisake Onna, which literally means the slit-mouthed woman because her mouth is slit from ear to ear. And she wears a surgical mask. And surgical masks are quite popular to wear in Japan, and now you'll see it a lot in South Korea because of the MERS epidemic that's kind of happening there. It's a way that they believe that limiting contact from, like, hand to mouth, and also if somebody coughs, it protects them from the germs. It keeps the germs inside the person who's sick, and it keeps them from going everywhere else. People wear these masks if they have a cold. And so this woman, this ghoulish woman, will walk around with a surgical mask on. She'll come up to a person and say, am I pretty? Otashi kirei. She'll just ask that. And you have a few different options, but none of them are going to end very well. The first one is saying yes, and she'll take off her surgical mask, revealing her hideous face. And then she's like, watashi kirei? Am I pretty? And you could just sit there and say, yeah. And then she'll go, okay, I'll make you as pretty as me and slit your mouth from ear to ear. And then you become a ghost. Or you could say no. And if she says, asks, am I pretty? And you say no, she just kills you with like whatever artifact she has on her. Usually it's scissors.
In other words, either way,
you're hosed either way. You're either getting killed by getting your head basically decapitated, or you're being killed by being stabbed to death with scissors. There's only two ways of avoiding this ghost. You can say mama, which means like you're okay looking. It's okay. And then she doesn't know how to take that because you've said yes and no at the same time. Or you can give her candy and then run away.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that is, in a nutshell, Kuchisake Onna, the split-mouthed woman. And she's actually my favorite. I don't know why I like her so much, just as a urban legend. I think it's because of her persistentness in Japanese pop culture, kind of like Okiku and Sadako from The Ring. It's just, she's managed to be a staple of Japanese horror for well over 200, 300 years. She's persistent. So, yeah, that's what that is. But anyway, I promised everyone this very interesting story about a samurai's head. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's actually rather long, so everyone...
Well, you've got about...
A half an hour.
30 minutes, maybe, yeah.
Oh, so Poochie Love in the chat room asked, what about Jeff's answer of pretty ugly to the woman? Yeah, you'd be dead. You get stabbed to death. I don't think any woman would really appreciate, or anyone for that matter, being called pretty ugly. Anyway, so this story is called Masakoto's Head, and it's a place you can visit. It's in Otemachi, 121 Chiyodo Ward. And that's a neighborhood of Japan, of not just Japan, Tokyo. It's actually their financial district. And it's really close to where the emperor's palace is today. So
now, do they still have, well, I'm sure they have the emperor's palace, but do they still have a sitting emperor?
Oh, yes, they do, Henry.
Okay.
his name's Emperor Akihito. And he is the son of Emperor Hirohito, that everyone, Western society kind of knows him as Hirohito, the emperor that had the War of Japan, or World War II.
Right.
And yes, there is a sitting emperor, and he has a wife, and they have kids, and they just celebrated, actually, one of his grandchildren became 20 years old, which is kind of the year you become an adult. And she has started doing royal duties, and she's kind of turning into the Kate Middleton of the Japanese imperial family. She's doing a lot of service work and everything. She's adorable. But anyway, so yes, they do have a sitting emperor, and he's about as old as Queen Elizabeth, actually. But
hey, back to the story.
Back to the story. So this is a little bit of history, and then we go into ghost story. So this is the story of Taira no Masakado, who lived from 903 to 940 AD. So this is during the Heian era of Japan, when the capital was in Kyoto. And if you're familiar with the story of the Tale of Genji, Genji Monogatari, this is the time frame when it was, 1,000 years ago. This was the heyday of Japanese culture. This is when you see kimono, the silk clothes that you see, the traditional clothing of Japan. This is when you see it heavily used, and this is very, very ornate time, and I particularly liked it. So Taira no Masakado was considered to be Japan's very first samurai. He was a minor but successful warlord who fought against the imperial government of Kyoto. The Taira clan actually were a bunch of princes who did not become imperial, the emperor, basically. So think about, of all the brothers of the emperor who never got to be in rule, they became the Taira clan. So they always fought against the imperial family. He established an independent kingdom in Kanto region, which is where the eastern side of the main island, now present-day Saitama. And he proclaimed himself the new ruler of Japan, which managed to really piss off the current emperor of Japan at that time. So the actual emperor put a bounty on Taira no Masakado's head, and Masakado found himself dead within 2 months. An arrow through the eyes, actually. So the two men who killed him decapitated him and took his head back to Kyoto, and it was put on display for everyone to see that this particular guy against the emperor had been killed. However, he was mad. His spirit came back. He wasn't given a fair burial, and his spirit inhabited his head. and his head began, actually, it didn't decomp at all. There was no decomposition for what went from 1 month to 2 months to 3 months. The head stayed fresh. And then one night it started to glow an eerie green glow. It rose off of the table where it had been placed for display, rose into the sky of Kyoto, and then started to float around looking for his body, because Masakado still had one more fight. He still had one more battle, and he wanted to make sure he took down the emperor. So for about a year, his head was seen floating around the Japanese countryside looking for his body. And his body, ironically, had gotten up around the same time and started wandering the countryside trying to find its head. And no one knows where his body went. But one day, or night, in what is now Tokyo, Masakado's head fell from the sky and hit and startled all the villagers of the fishing village of Edo, which is now Tokyo. So, I like this because it sounds like a UFO story right now, doesn't it?
I don't know. I don't think the head's as big as a UFO.
This is the green orb floating around the sky, and people are like, oh, that's really creepy, and it turns out to be the samurai's head. So the villagers cleaned his head in a pond nearby and put it into a burial mound. And from time to time, his ghost would rise, kind of make some mischief, and then go back again. And everything was kind of hunky-dory for the next few hundred years, up until the 1923 Kanto earthquake, which shook up the country horribly. And it actually disturbed his final resting place. And the Minister of Finance, yes, the government-filled Ministry of Finance, decided that they wanted to build, or really establish, a area in the city that was just for finance and for the banks and everything. And they decided to do this in the area of Otemachi, which is where his memorial, where the samurai's memorial is. So they filled in the pond where Masakado's head was cleaned. They kind of bulldozed his hill and where his memorial was, and they built a temporary building. And within the year, 14 office workers had died.
Really?
Yes.
Was mysteriously, or?
A variety of different ways. Some of it was illness, some of it was accidents, and some of it they really could not explain. But in addition to that, numerous other office workers had horrible accidents happen to their hands and their legs that put them out of work for several weeks or months at a time. And they only were there for a few years before the Ministry of Finance decided to just raise the building. And what they did in 1940 was they raised the building, they reestablished the pond, they rebuilt the hill, and had a Shinto ceremony done to calm Masakado's spirit, because Shintoism deals with the spirit world. A small memorial service was held there every year until World War II, which, for obvious reasons, they kind of lapsed doing the ceremony. In 1940, however, a bolt of lightning struck the remaining office building and burnt it to the ground. And then the ministry's like, oh, hey, maybe we should do a little bit more. So at the 1,000-year anniversary of this samurai's death, they had a huge, huge extravagant ceremony, calling in different Shinto priests, and they built a new memorial for him. And that's the one that's currently on display that you can visit at the Kando Myojin Shrine. And that wasn't actually the end of it, though. Because after World War II, America came in and occupied Japan. And the American forces were like, okay, this is an area of Tokyo. We want to actually, and it's in the center of Tokyo, we are going to take down this shrine, which I don't think they knew the cultural significance of it. and they wanted to put a motor pool for their military vehicles there. So in an attempt to level the shrine, the bulldozer that they were using flipped over and killed the driver.
Sounds like somebody's having a lot of bad luck.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody's trying to trying to dig into cursed land. There was also a string of other accidents that happened to the U.S. soldiers that were stationed in that area. And along with the pleas from the local officials, all this convinced the Americans occupying that area to cancel the project. Now, if you want to visit this place, it's called the Kanda Myojin Shrine. And I'll write it in the chat room in a little bit. And his head is said to be still there. Enshrined, and you can go to Otemachi Station, take exit C5, and head towards the Mitsui Busan building, which is the Mitsui Financial building. And this shrine is down an alley and up a few stairs, and all you can really tell is by seeing that it's there is outside of the shrine there's a bunch of banners, and that's it. And the thing that kills me is that I've walked past this very shrine. I've walked past it, and I didn't go in. I kicked myself.
Did you know what it was?
I didn't know the significance of it at the time.
You'll be back over there.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to be careful, because you don't want to lose your head over it.
Yeah. And actually, I wanted to share with everyone a really cool tour group that is in Tokyo. Should you ever find yourself being, I will write down the shrine where his head can be found in a minute. If you ever find yourself visiting Tokyo and you want a really neat guided tour, there is a group called the Haunted Tokyo Tours, and it's at www.hauntedtokyotours.com, and it's 3,000 yen a person for their different tours, and it's led by Lily, who is an American who has lived in Tokyo for 30 years. And June 16th and 23rd, she has the Blood of the Samurai Tour, which talks about the ghost story I just told you all about. On June 30th is the Graveyards Tour, which is really interesting because you tour all the different ancient burial grounds where samurai imperial family members are buried, but also contemporary writers and authors and illustrators and heads of state. They're all buried there. July 7th is the Ghosts and Goblins of Old Tokyo, and it's the Tanabata edition because July 7th is the Tanabata or Star Festival. And that will be really fun because she talks about all the ghosts and ghost stories from Asakusa in Old Tokyo. So that is Haunted Tokyo Tours at hauntedtokyotours.com.
Now, on the ones that I've got, the same one that you tried to... No, not that one. It's on the other one. This one here is called... the inviting ghost hand. It says a mysterious hand beckons from a dark wall. This entry explores some of the differences between Western and Japanese ghosts, whatever that means. There wasn't much to it. They don't say too much about it. But I know you was talking about the one earlier in the show called The Road to Hell.
Yeah, the Gateway to Hell.
The Gateway to Hell. There's one here called the Rattling Bridge. And they say it's hard to sleep when your house is on the path of the road to hell. A man and his family see a nightly parade of ghosts making their final journey.
Mm-hmm.
Going across, bridge. I guess, the bridge and, or something
they
like
say
that.
It's hard
so,
to sleep
anyway.
When your house is on the path.
Yeah, because that goes back to the point where if your soul was pure, you get a bridge to walk over the river. Basically, Styx.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that one, there's different places, just like here in America, we have different places that claim to be the portal to hell. So there's different places that people claim to be the portal to hell. Though I will say the image that they have, and I will post this website into the chat room, a lot of the images that they have associated with the stories don't actually go together, but whatever. The interesting thing they have is the Hunger Gods?
Where did I see that one at?
It's right underneath the Rattling Bridge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about that one real quick?
It just, all it says is, hunger is a terrible way to die, and all these ghosts want to do is share their pain. Is that too much to ask? That actually is something called a gaki. Gaki. And in the Buddhist realms of reincarnation that I was taught, was gaki are the hungry ghosts, and they're one realm below humans. If you've managed to, and they're one realm above hell. So if you've managed to be a very greedy person, very gluttonous person in life, you turn into a gaki in death. And gaki are spirits that have enlarged stomachs, very small arms, very small legs, very long necks, and then a melon-shaped head. And they have red hair. And what they do, you cannot see them on our plane, though psychics and mediums may be able to pick them up. And they're only about the size of a small child, maybe a five, six, seven-year-old. And they eat corpses of the dead, which have been left out.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're not pleasant things to see. And also, it's why stereotypically redheads aren't treated so well in Japan.
Did you dye your hair before you went over there?
I'm a natural redhead, Henry.
Did you dye your hair before you went over there?
No. I've only been to Japan once blonde.
Oh.
And all the rest of the times I was red.
Red.
Oh. Yeah. I've had people... I find the humor in it now. I feel bad for him. But there was a man riding a bicycle. He was an elderly man. And it was when I was living there going to school. And I said, Ohayou gozaimasu, which is just good morning. And I startled him. And he fell off his... Well, he ran into a brick... Well, a wall. A garden retaining wall. And fell off his bike. And when I came up to ask him if he was okay, he just kind of, he couldn't make a sound. He just shuffled away with his bike. So I don't know exactly how or why I startled him. Maybe it was because suddenly somebody said good morning. He didn't see me because I had red hair like a death god or a death spirit. Or because I kind of look like a ghost because I'm already really pale as it is. I startled him.
Now, on the other list that I sent you, the one that you had me pronounce a name.
Yes.
Got another one here you can talk about. See if I can pronounce it.
Which number is it?
11.
11.
Is it Isonade?
Isonade.
Well, I was close.
Yeah, you're close. Yeah, whenever you see an E, it actually makes an E sound. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you going to read it?
No, I was going to let you do it.
Okay. So, Isonade. Imagine a shark. Now, imagine a shark whose fins were like a cheese grater, except for instead of cheese, they grate your flesh. That's the Isonade, who use their teeth and fins to both fillet you and then drag you down to the ocean floor, if you're lucky enough to meet one in the water. Or unlucky enough, really. Unlucky.
Enough, yeah.
Or, in other words, it's Jaws.
Yeah. Or as they say in the chat room, Sharknado.
Oops.
Let's see if there's another good one in here because we got time for, I don't know, one, maybe two more.
Yeah.
How about number 12?
And would you like to add fries with that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, the Bake Kujira. That sounds very familiar, doesn't it? The Kujira.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it sounds like Gojira, which is what we call it, Godzilla.
Oh, okay.
Ah, yeah. Anyway, the Bakekujira. Japan may still get in trouble for whaling, which it does, but the rest assured the country knows it's wrong, because when a whale is killed, it could come back as a Bakekujira, an animated whale skeleton that surfaces much like it did in life, while spotting a living whale is considered very lucky. Just one look at a Bakekujira is enough to give you and your village plague, famine, fire, and or diseases and other disasters.
Other disasters, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's interesting woodblock prints from about the 1800s that show Bakekujira. They're huge. They didn't actually mention the fact that normally, yeah, the whale, they're pretty big, but the Bakekujira is about 10 times as large as what its original physical form was.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, here's a good one. Number two.
Number two?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Jirogumo. The Jirogumo is a spider woman. She's not a member of the Avengers with a needlessly complicated backstory, however. She's a giant spider with the ability to take the form of a beautiful lady. Sometimes the top half, though, is human, and the lower torso is that of a spider with those legs. She seduces men, wraps them up in her web, poisons them, and then devours them. One variation of the Jirogumo myth says that sometimes she appears as a woman holding a baby who asks men passing by to hold it. When they do, they are sometimes surprised to discover that the baby is made up of thousands of spider eggs, which then burst open.
Woo! Wow.
The interesting... Well, Yeah, I'm not... Never mind.
What was you going to say?
Nothing. Oh. Nothing. Just move on. Pick another number.
Oh, pick another number, huh? I bet, CC, did you happen to look at the list?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, I sent it to both of you. So, anyway, let's see. Okay, here's one. Number three.
Number three. Oh, I was hoping you'd ask me about this one. This is one I know well. Teke Teke. Teke Teke is is more of an urban legend than a regular myth, and I will say it's only been created in the past 30 years. And as it's reasonably new, as the article states. She's the spirit of a girl who tripped on some train tracks and was cut in half by an oncoming train. Now she crawls around looking for other people to share her fate, which she facilitates by cutting them in half with a scythe. There's a variant of the Teke Teke myth about a girl named Reiko Kashima, who was also cut in half by a train. Now she wanders bathroom stalls and asks people on the toilet if they know where her legs are. If people don't answer with the Meishin Railway, she cuts off their legs, which is bad at the best of times, but let alone when you're trying to go to the bathroom.
Or especially if you have your foot caught in the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the name Reiko Kashima is actually a pun, so it's basically murderous ghost.
Well, now, how about number five?
Oh, this one is, I've seen an illustration of this, but I've never really read about it. It's the Katakirawa. Say that with me, Henry.
Is that a mouthful?
Say it with me, Henry. The Katakirawa.
Rawa.
They're the ghosts of baby pigs, which, one, have one ear, two, cast no shadow, and three, steal your soul if they manage to run between your legs. I think I'd rather be chased by the giant mass skeleton mentioned in an earlier part of this article than a bunch of tiny, squealing, dead baby pigs. Thank you. Yeah.
Wow.
And what they're referring to is what's number four, which is the Gasha Dokuro. The spirit is simple. It is a gigantic skeleton made of the bones of people who have died from starvation. They wander around, grab you, bite your head off, drink your blood, and add you to the skeleton pile.
Wow. In the chat room, they're hollering number one.
Number one. Okay. Okay. The Kamaitachi. Kamaitachi. The Kamaitachi literally means the sickle weasel. There are three of them, sometimes brothers, sometimes triplets, who go around cutting off people's legs. The first weasel knocks someone down, the second cuts off the legs, and the third sews up the wounds. They move so fast, basically, people blink and suddenly realize they no longer have legs. Admittedly, the fact that one of the weasels takes the time to patch up people before absconding with the limbs helps. But if the idea that you could suddenly discover that weasels have stolen your legs doesn't scare you, then you're better a man than I. That one is... I don't even know how to reply to that one. I think I have seen it in my big book of Japanese obakemono, the ghosts and spirits. But it's not very common. There's actually... this one's fun. I can't remember the name of the spirit, but it's basically a furry rock that trips you. That's its entire existence.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. We got about 8 minutes yet.
Yeah.
Now, if anybody in the chat room's got any questions about anything that you'd like for us to talk about, go ahead and either private chat to Ceiling Cat, Cat Cloco, or myself, and we'll have a few minutes to talk about it. Also, I guess we can get Cece in here. She's back with us now.
I've been here the whole time.
Yeah, no, you wasn't. You didn't answer us when we was talking to you a while ago.
Yeah, that was...
Oh, okay.
Too many buttons to push.
So, we got a few minutes. Now's a good time for you to do some talking. Got any questions or anything else that you'd like to talk about? Any news paranormal that you've heard of lately?
No, they're talking in the chat room now about hopping ghosts.
Hopping ghosts.
Ghosts.
Hopping ghosts, I think. Oh, those. The little zombie things that you stick the little sheet of paper in front of their face and then they hop around. No, they don't have... a corpse. Yeah, it is a corpse that hops. From what I've read of Chinese ghost stories, they have a lot more undead than Japanese ghost horror stories have. More like they have more ghouls and zombies, basically. So what they're talking about is the hopping ghost, which I don't know the name of off the top of my head, but I've seen them before in pop culture. There's basically a zombie that's, a reanimated person zombie that is reanimated using a spell, and you put the spell on that person's face. So there's always a piece of paper basically covering the eyes, nose, and mouth, and they hop around. I'm sure there's a better reason than other than they just do, but unfortunately I don't know about it. However, I will research it.
Sherry wants to know about some kind of disease victims.
What about the Itai disease? What? Itai literally means painful. That sounds like an urban legend that's been turned into a horror movie franchise.
Bill has another Japanese word that I'm not going to try and pronounce.
Oh, yeah. No, that's not actually Japanese. Oh. That's Jiangxi, which is the name of that hopping zombie.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, how do Japanese view blonde hair? Asks Moof. They used to always touch mine. Let's see. It seems to be very popular. I can't speak as the entire consensus of Japan, but it's just very popular. It's very bright, and it takes a lot of bleaching for the brown hair to get to blonde. So it may be a status symbol of, hey, I have enough money to bleach my hair blonde.
Sai has a question. What forms of protection do they use against ghosts?
That one, they would use the itako, as I mentioned earlier. Traditionally, they would hire that medium to do channeling. They have something called an omyoji, which is no longer practiced, but during the Heian era, during the time of that samurai I mentioned earlier, these were practitioners of occult magic that was tied to Shintoism. And the most famous omyoji was a man named Abe no Seime. And I will include him. I'll make a note to include him on my website explanations tomorrow. Very interesting guy. He was said to be born of a fox spirit and a mortal man. Other than that, what I've seen actually used in present day is Mame Make, which is basically, it's done February 2nd, so on Groundhog's Day, and it's to banish evil spirits and goblins out of a house. And the story goes that, very quickly, a farmer made a goblin very angry, and his goblin threatened to eat him and his daughter. And the farmer's like, oh, please don't do that. Instead, I'll give you my soybeans. And the goblin's like, okay, but in order to keep the goblin from coming back, and I can't remember why, he decided to basically pan fry the soybeans and then give them to the goblin. And so the goblin couldn't actually use them because the soybeans were dead. So what you do on February 2nd is you take some soybeans that have been basically baked, and you throw them out of your house and you say, evil be gone, good come in. And you just throw them outside your house. So you toss the goblins out with the beans.
All right.
And I've actually participated in that ceremony for a Osukanon in Nagoya, which is a Buddhist temple.
Well, believe it or not, we have made it through. I haven't had to try and pronounce too many words. I did. I didn't do too bad on. I'm glad I wasn't trying to have to pronounce any of those other Japanese words, though. Because our time is scooting right on by, I'm going to let you do double duty. You get to do yours and Jeff's tonight.
Okay. For everyone, very quickly, you can follow us on Twitter at Paraview Radio. Jeff is Jeff, I think it's Jeff Gould, and I'm Kat Kloko, all on Twitter. You can also listen to The Paranormal View on iTunes. Just go to the podcast app, search for Paranormal View, and subscribe to us, please. Let's see, what else? Yes, follow my graphic novel, Jinxed Comic, at jinxedcomic.com, and that's it.
Oh, you forgot all the other good stuff.
Oh, yeah, the Paranormal Review page is jeffgould.net, /2011pnv.htm.
And you got the paranormalview.com.
Which you always forget to update.
When did I update?
Yes, theparanormalview.com, everyone.
I believe I put it on there for this week. I think. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it does need to be updated. I've been hollering at my son to get in there and do that. And he's
hey, Henry, it's 10 o'clock. We need to end the show.
Yeah, you got another minute. Well, now you don't.
Thank you for joining us, everyone.
You got anything, CC, before I jump off here?
Nope. Good show.
All right, then. So with that, we are going to say goodnight. See you guys next week. You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the ParaX Radio Network. Tune in again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.